The history of the West has been mostly Christian.
Diseases, land grabs, and outright massacres led to the annihilation of entire communities.
Sacrifice, service, affinity with the victims, courage, and above all, humility.
For someone to say love your enemies, that just sounded foolish.
Put it in practice and you'll have a major contribution to a peaceful world.
From the Center for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Justine Toe. When it comes to the sins of the Christian Church, the Crusades are one of the first things that come to mind. And that's why we spend time telling some stories of the Crusades in For the Love of God, how the Church is better and worse than you ever imagined. Because, let's be honest, it's really hard to reconcile stories of crusading knights who took up arms against the supposed enemies of Christ with Jesus' call for his followers to love their enemies and not repay violence with violence. But a lot of what we think we know about the Crusades is off the mark. We think it's about Christian expansion and takeover of a peaceful Muslim civilization, or we think about it as a way for crusading knights to make their fortune. We covered these kinds of criticisms in an earlier episode of Life and Faith. Historian Christopher Tymon says the Crusades seem to us glamorous, dramatic, and alien. Here he is on a couple of the main myths and misconceptions about this series of religious wars between the 11th and 15th centuries.
In the West, in the UK or Australia or the US, they are seen as an example of medieval brutality in the name of religion. In other parts of the world, they have been rebranded as an example of early Western imperialism and colonialism. And both sides of that equation are false.
He goes on to say that it's highly improbable that French knights wanted to acquire land that was over 2,500 miles away when it wasn't profitable to do so. In this episode, we're picking up on a lesser-known aspect of the Crusades because not all Crusades were against Muslims, and nor did they all take place in the Middle East. Just who else did Christians crusade against? Other Christians. And they did this, they claimed, in the name of Christ. Go figure, right? Later we'll look at the sack of Constantinople in 1204. Constantinople is modern-day Istanbul. Now, the taking of this great Christian city and the slaughter of Christians that was the result was far from the original objective of the Fourth Crusade. The death of Christians was, in modern military speak, collateral damage. But first, the Albigensian Crusade of the early 13th century. Now, this is a crusade that took place in southern France, not the Middle East, and it was a crusade against other Christians, those deemed heretics. Now, the Albigensian movement called for reform of corrupt clergy and a return to ideals of poverty and perfection. Sounds good so far, right? But they also had some very strange ideas that rejected key church doctrines. As a result, church authorities deemed their beliefs unorthodox and went even further than that. They were dangerous. So they applied pressure to the Albigensians so that they would return to the fold. And after numerous attempts failed, the Pope decided on a military solution instead. Kill everyone. And so began a 20-year crusade to essentially wipe out a rival spiritual movement. Béziers in southern France was the setting for the first major military action of this crusade. The Pope's army demanded the town surrender its heretics, but the townspeople refused, and so the crusaders stormed the city. But then they faced this problem: how to distinguish between the faithful and the heretics. Now, the Pope's man on the ground is supposed to have replied, "Kill them all. God will know his own." So they butchered young and old, some 20,000 men, women, and children. Seeking sanctuary in a church was no good either. The knights simply forced their way in and slaughtered everyone. This was a particularly notorious episode during the Crusades. Here's Professor Christine Ames, an historian of medieval Europe from the University of South Carolina. We interviewed her for our documentary.
The Albigensian Crusade is, in many ways, an anomaly in medieval Europe. It is shocking to people at the time. The war is exceptionally brutal, exceptionally bloody. And I don't mean that as a modern person talking about the Middle Ages. I mean, again, people in the moment point out how brutal and bloody the Albigensian Crusade is.
Exceptionally brutal. Exceptionally bloody. And all for what? Because it failed to root out this so-called heresy. The enemy within, the heretic who put their own soul in peril, was potentially considered even more dangerous than the enemy without, the Muslim assaulting the Holy Lands, because it was the enemy within that could corrupt the church. This sounds like madness to me, that people would kill others because of their wrong beliefs. But, and we found this throughout the making of the documentary, it is so easy for us to impose our own 21st century values and attitudes on peoples of the past. As an example of that, we are very individualistic, and so we can tolerate difference, sometimes anyway. But for the medieval mind, the health of the community was all important, and beliefs that were heretical, even if they were held only by the few, they could endanger the many. I've got to remember that they inhabited a very different world from ours, and entertain the possibility that had I been alive at the time, I might have just as easily gone along with the kinds of things that I, today, consider crazy. But even with that in mind, punishing wrong belief in such an excessive and violent way is shocking, especially as it made no attempt to distinguish between the innocent and the guilty. And then there's the utter lack of mercy. And when you set the actions of Christians against those of Jesus, who never forced anyone to do anything, it's particularly heinous. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Another example of Christians behaving terribly during the Crusades was the sack of Constantinople. Now, we don't tell this story in our documentary, For the Love of God. It was one of those cases where, for reasons of time and space, a great story ends up on the cutting room floor.
The Fourth Crusade is usually the crusade that people will refer to say just how bad these crusades could become. In truth, it's more a classic example of how wrong things can go, even when people are all trying to work together for a common goal.
That was Professor Thomas Madden from St. Louis University, a Crusades historian and author of The Concise History of the Crusades. We're not going to get into all the details of the Fourth Crusades. It's brutal and a disaster from the start. But here's some of what we know. Now, the mission was to take back Jerusalem from Muslim control, and they planned to launch the campaign from Egypt in 1202. To smooth the passage to Egypt, the Crusaders cut a deal with Venetians, who are going to provide all the ships to ferry the army there, and the plan is that each Crusader will pay for his own passage and food. But then only about a third of the expected 33,000 Crusaders show up. So suddenly there is no money to pay for this huge undertaking, and they've spent a very long time waiting to even get to go on crusade. So then one guy called Alexius shows up and says he has a claim to the throne of Constantinople. He starts making all sorts of promises. He will foot this increasingly large bill if the Crusaders will install him as emperor by getting rid of his uncle who is presently king. The Crusaders take the deal. What other option do they have? And through their efforts, Alexius ascends the throne. Now, surprise, surprise, he doesn't fulfill his end of the deal. He pays them some money, but not all of it. And when Alexius is assassinated not long after, the Crusaders have even less hope of actually getting paid. So the Crusaders decide to attack Constantinople to extract payment.
Constantinople, the greatest of the Christian cities, was filled with thousands of relics, and people would come from all over to see them.
Now, Constantinople is a Christian city, and we should clarify, Christendom at this time is split between the Greek East, centred on Constantinople, and the Latin West, centred on Rome. There are differences in theology and practice between East and West, but in essence, whether Greek or Latin, East or West, these are all Christians. And after all, the First Crusade was about the Latin Christians coming to the aid of their Eastern brothers and sisters. But in this sack of Constantinople, these former allies are now pitted against each other. Western Christians attacked their Eastern counterparts and were given religious justification to do so by their leaders.
The average crusader was told by their bishops who were on the crusade that this was a righteous act because the Byzantines, the Greeks, had murdered their lord and they had refused to meet the commitments that they had made to the crusaders. And as a result, they had completely diverted this crusade and caused it come to know good. The Pope, Pope Innocent III, had in fact sent letters to the leadership of the Crusade saying that under no circumstances are you to attack the Greek Christians or Constantinople for any reason whatsoever. They knew that, but they were also in a difficult situation. Without the attack on the city, without being able to get the food and the money that they needed to continue, the Crusade simply couldn't go. As one of the Crusaders said, they couldn't go forward, they couldn't go backwards, and they couldn't stay where they were. So they needed to do something. It was a very bad situation.
The city surrendered to the Crusaders, but the conquering army of Christian pilgrims, that's how Crusaders saw themselves, went mad with bloodlust.
Now, once the city fell, there's no doubt that the Crusaders did not play by their own rules. They all swore on relics before the attack that if the city fell, they would not touch the churches, they would not touch any of the monasteries or the monks or the women in the monasteries. And in fact, once the city fell, it was chaos.
Days of unrestrained raping, looting, pillaging, and murdering followed. Now, Constantinople was rich, full of palaces and ornate churches. Everything of value was stripped from the churches. Wealthy lords were expelled from their beautiful, opulent homes. And everyone within the city was considered fair game for the Crusaders. We can get a sense of the carnage from this account by Nicetas Koniotes, a 13th century Greek historian.
The most wicked and impious deeds were perpetrated by all with one accord. Did these madmen, raging thus against the sacred, spare pious matrons and girls of marriageable age, or those maidens who, having chosen a life of chastity, were consecrated to God? There were lamentations and cries of woe and weeping in the narrow ways, wailing at the crossroads, moaning in the temples, outcries of men, screams of women, the taking of captives and the dragging about, tearing in pieces and raping of bodies, heretofore sound and whole. Such, then, were the outrageous crimes committed by the Western armies against the inheritance of Christ.
Koniotes even goes on to say that it would have been better for Constantinople to have been taken by Muslims. Referring to the conquest of Jerusalem by Saladin in 1187, he writes,
"They allowed everyone to depart in exchange for the payment of a few gold coins. They took only the ransom money and left to the people all their possessions. Thus the enemies of Christ dealt magnanimously with the Latin infidels, inflicting upon them neither sword, nor fire, nor hunger, nor persecution, nor nakedness, nor bruises, nor constraints." How differently the Latins treated us, who love Christ and are their fellow believers.
In telling these stories, I don't want to diminish the fact that Crusades were often waged against the Muslim world, with Muslims suffering terribly as a result. I just think it's important that we also tell stories of Christians treating other Christians appallingly, because that's the history we have. It's important to call out the instances when Christians have acted violently and coercively, which completely goes against everything that Jesus, their guy, stood for.
3 days was the accepted period of a sack in the Middle Ages. They sacked it for a little bit more than that. But it greatly damaged the city of Constantinople. And that ultimately was the end of the Crusade. I mean, it had never raised sword against a Muslim, but it had actually conquered and destroyed the greatest Christian city in the world.
When it comes to the sacking of Constantinople, even if you take into account the mad fog of war, it's hard to think that they could see themselves as warriors for Christ and yet slaughter their Christian brothers and sisters. This was acknowledged by Pope John Paul II in 2001. He wrote to the Archbishop of Athens, Christodoulos, to apologise for the sacking of Constantinople almost 800 years before.
For the occasions past and present, when sons and daughters of the Catholic Church have sinned against their Orthodox brothers and sisters, may the Lord grant us the forgiveness we beg of him. Some events of the distant past have left deep wounds in the minds and hearts of people to this day. I am thinking of the disastrous sack of the imperial city of Constantinople, which was for so long the bastion of Christianity in the East. It is tragic that the assailants, who had set out to secure free access for Christians to the Holy Land, turned against their own brothers in the faith. The fact that they were Latin Christians fills Catholics with deep regret. How can we fail to see here the mystery of evil at work in the human heart? To God alone belongs judgment, and therefore we entrust the heavy burden of the past to his endless mercy.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Justine Toe. Our documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined, is out now. Go to betterandworse.film to buy your tickets or to host a screening for your community. We've been featuring interviews and stories from our documentary in recent weeks, and you can catch up on those on our website, publicchristianity.org. And please subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. Just type Life and Faith in the search box to find us on your podcast app. Next week.
When you talk to Australians about religion, they make a very clear distinction between institutional religion, big cross, and the faith of the individual believer, big tick, even among people who don't have any religious faith. They admire it and often envy it.